You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Monday, the 28th of October 2024. The Australian share market rose today, but only just by 0.1%. We'll have the details with Kai Chen from MPC Markets. But first, to ComSec's State of the State report, which ranks Western Australia as Australia's top-performing economic state. With the details, Raina Bosch spoke with ComSec economist Ryan Felsman.
Well, Western Australia has ranked first on ComSec's State of the States report for the first time since July 2014, and it's ranked first on three key economic indicators. Firstly, relative population growth, also relative unemployment and retail spending. We have seen home prices in Western Australia lift by a whopping 24.1% over the year to September, and of course, home prices have been led higher due to strong population growth. So Western Australia added about 90,000 people over the year to 2023. That's the strongest on record. We've got population growth of 3.1% over the year to March as well. That's the strongest across the nation. That's propelling home prices higher. There's a lack of supply of homes in Perth in particular relative to demand. We've also seen a strong jobs market as well in Western Australia. The unemployment rate in Perth is just 3.6%. There's been about 58,000 jobs added over the year to September, and that's supporting retail spending as well. Retail spending in Western Australia is up 4.5% over the year to August. So broadly, a strong economy in Australia's west.
So what is it that Western Australia is doing that the other states aren't?
Well, we're seeing a two-speed economy across Australia at the moment. So on one hand, we are seeing strong performances from the resources-focused states. So Western Australia was ranked first, of course. At the same time, we saw Queensland move up to third spot. And also Northern Territory, if you look at the annual growth rates, its economic momentum is quite strong at the moment. It was in third spot if you look at those annual growth rates. And what we are seeing is strong income from those exports that we see from overseas. And also at the same time, we are seeing elevated commodity prices. And that's also being supported by strong population growth and therefore solid labour markets and also retail spending. On the other hand, we are seeing the interest rate sensitive parts of the economy, particularly in the southeast of the country, economies like New South Wales, Tasmania, Victoria, and also the ACT lagging, as those higher interest rates really crimp housing activity, weigh on home prices and also consumer spending.
New South Wales is trailing in seventh position ahead of only the Northern Territory, which has a relatively small population. Why?
Well, New South Wales has lagged the rest of the country when it comes to economic performance, and that's largely due to the fact that interest rates are 12-year highs, really impacting housing activity. Also, the private sector is under some pressure in New South Wales on the back of higher interest rates. New South Wales is particularly interest rate sensitive, with households more heavily indebted, particularly with mortgage debt. And what we have seen is that impacting both retail spending and the housing market. Home prices in Greater Sydney are only up around 4.5% over the year to September. We have seen also dwelling approvals also down at the lowest level since 2013, down about 9.7% over the year to August. At the same time, we have seen dwelling starts, the commencement of new homes, they're down 18.3%, the weakest in about a decade. So residential building activity has been impacted. Also, population growth has reached a peak in New South Wales. It has started to ebb somewhat as well, and that's also weighing on some infrastructure spending at the same time.
What does this all say about the state of the broader national economy?
What this all says is that the economy is growing quite modestly at the moment, growing at around a 1.5% annualised rate. Taking out the COVID-19 pandemic period, it's the most sluggish economic growth since the 1990s recession. And of course, that's weighing on consumer spending at the moment. The job market is holding up. However, we are seeing residential dwelling investment quite weak at the moment, and that's really weighing on dwelling investment more broadly, particularly in those southeastern states. So going forward, we're expecting the Australian economy to pick up somewhat into 2025 on the back of a lift in household incomes with tax cuts in particular, but also the jobs market remaining fairly firm.
That is Ryan Felsman there from ComSec.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
Australian share market tracking sideways ahead of the US presidential election. The ASX 200 up just 0.1%. For more, I spoke with Kai Chen from MPC Markets.
At the moment, the market is in a steady state. Everyone's a little bit reserved to see which direction it is heading. We're not too far away from the election, so we've got about a week to go, and Trump is slightly ahead in the odds market. So he's at about $1.60, Kamala's at about $2.50. In terms of what this means for the stock market, historically, we've seen that under a Democratic president, you know, the GDP for the US grows at about 4.8%, whereas under Republicans, it grows at about 1.7%. So typically, you know, Democrats tend to perform well under Democrat governments. But I think, you know, this time it's a little bit in the mix. There's talks of stimulus if Trump comes in, you know, a lot of spend on infrastructure. So I think the market is really just waiting to see how the storm settles in that election.
Oil has taken a huge hit overnight, down 5%. Run us through why and the implications.
Yeah, so we saw oil opening a lot lower today. Over the weekend, basically, Israel struck Iran, but it wasn't on crucial infrastructure. So whether it's you know, nuclear facilities or crucial oil assets. So basically, the market has taken that as de-escalatory. And basically, Iran has come out and said that they are not going to retaliate based on those attacks. And I think that's really what's caused oil prices to fall off today.
Inflation numbers due out on Wednesday. What's the market thinking it'll mean for interest rates?
Yeah, I think it will be an interesting one on Wednesday because, you know, the market is expecting to see the lowest print of CPI over the last 2.5 years at about 2.9%. The RBA is looking at the trim mean, which is at, expected to be about 3.4%, which is still above the 2 to 3% target band for the RBA. But realistically, I don't think there's going to be a change from the Reserve Bank. And the market's basically pricing a rate cut out till April next year. We've seen that, you know, unemployment over the last month has come out quite strong. So really, you know, it's Australia's quite different to where the rest of the world is at. So I don't think there's any rush that the RBA will look to cut rates.
Any company news grabbing your attention today?
I think the big announcement today was Paladin. So they've released their first production report. So basically, their operational mine, Heinrich Langer in Namibia, has come onto production. They are starting to produce uranium, but the production has been a bit lackluster due to operational issues. So they're planning to shut down their mines for about 2 weeks and improve the operational efficiency. But the market really hasn't taken well to that. It dropped to about 21%, dropped 21% today. So quite dramatic. It's recovered a little bit, but I think everybody's worried to see how they improve that operational efficiency.
And finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors at the moment?
I think gold and precious metal has done really well this year. So gold over the last year has basically performed, you know, gained about 32%. And, you know, we're given all the uncertainties in the markets at the moment. I think it does represent a good safe haven for investors. So that's where, that's where I think the opportunity is.
That's Kai Chen there from MPC Markets. Let's move now to financial complaints, where there are calls today for more effective and culturally appropriate financial services as complaints from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people surge. The Australian Financial Complaints Authority says it received more than 3,100 complaints from First Nations people last financial year. That's up 25% on the previous 12 months. For more, I spoke with June Smith, AFCA Deputy Chief Ombudsman.
And it may be as a result of a range of things. For example, rising costs of living are affecting us all, as is the digital transition to banking and other services as well. But we think that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are also more aware of AFCA and its services, and they are starting to engage more with a range of financial products.
What are the types of things that they've been complaining about the most?
We have seen increases in complaints related to unauthorised transactions, so think scam activity. But we've also seen delays in insurance claims, particularly for motor vehicles, and unfortunately for applications for hardship assistance that are not being responded to by the banks.
So what needs to be done to address that?
Look, I think firstly for firms, there's a need for them to understand that some Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities are remote and regional and don't always have access to proper internet or phone services. There really is a need for First Nations people to be able to engage with First Nations mob when they ring a financial firm, and particularly for those firms to be able to identify that they are talking to a First Nations person. So we are encouraging all financial firms to look at the staff that they have to respond when First Nations people ring up and either complain or want to raise an application for hardship, for example, to think about whether or not those staff are trained in culturally appropriate practice. And if you're delivering services to the bush, particularly through online services, have a think about the impact that might be having on the communities and their ability to engage with you like other Australians do.
And what about that implication of being in a remote community?
It's certainly something that we have our eye on and how excluded some of these communities may be. But if we think about the closure of ATMs and bank branches, for example, if you're living in Palm Island, even in Cairns, it is for financial firms, I think, to understand how all sections of the community will engage with their services going forward. And if you are taking services out of a community, have a think about what that looks like, particularly if you don't have access to phone and internet services. We always think about Australians engaging with financial firms and that financial firms are friendly and wanting to talk to their customers. But if you're a First Nations person and not always have you had the experience of engaging with institutions, think about what that might look like for your First Nations customers. Do you even have processes where you allow First Nations people to self-identify so your service can be tailored to what they need? So these are just some of the things that we think can happen, including understanding that identification can be different for mob as well. So financial firms should really be thinking about tell it once policies and procedures where First Nations people can provide the identification materials that they have, and firms will actively engage with that and not expect mob to always be producing ID that they may not have if they're far from their own communities and homes, and that they may not have the experience that other Australians have, even with internet services.
That is June Smith there, the Deputy Chief Ombudsman from AFCA.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.